from Hollywood Pictures.
¿Cómo está usted?
Ever since Stoney and Dave interrupted his million-year siesta, this teenage caveman...
A caveman?
...is having a non-stop blast.
Try the salsa.
He's on a roll, out of control, and turning into the party animal of the year.
Weasel! Weasel!
Encino Man.
Bone harsh is big, buddy.
Rated PG. Now playing at a theater near you.
Hello!
Hey!
Figuring the weasel little Jew?
Oops.
I feel like a duck-billed platypus.
To check out the knots. It's the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Let's go, Tybalt! Great adventures await!
Hey, buddies. Welcome to Year of the Weasel, the Totally Buff Pauly Shore podcast. Yeah, we have full disclosure, we've only taken like a second between these episodes. So you're hearing them 2 weeks apart. We haven't had time to practice our weasel noise. So that's going to be my assignment for myself. Yeah, I'll learn how to do this.
We're going to get so good by the end of it.
If nothing else, that will be what we accomplish at the end of that's going to be my goal for the end of this year, is that I'm going to be able to do the weasel noise.
I'm also growing my hair out, so I'm really like, I'm going to start wearing headbands mesh.
You know what, I thought seconds before we started recording the last episode, I thought about finding my headband, and then I realized how insane that sounds. Because I couldn't even find the proper microphone I needed. And I'm like, if I don't have a proper microphone, but I do have a head scarf, I'm not proud of myself. So this episode, I guess I should describe what we're doing. Year of the Weasel, in case you're just tuning in for the first time, is where we are watching a Pauly Shore movie or thing.
Media product. Month.
Yeah, we're still deciding how the end of the year will pan out, but the first couple of months are going to be us watching a different Pauly Shore movie every month. And so for this month, we are doing actually a twofer, kind of. We're doing Encino Man and also Class Act.
Two films from 1992. Oh, right. Yeah. You can tell which one we prepared for. Yeah. I'm Zach.
I'm Kelly.
We're professional. So, for you in your timeline, it was 2 weeks ago. We talked about Totally Pauly. We talked about the big break that resulted in Pauly Shore's film career. And one of the things that I mentioned was that Encino Man, of the three lead characters, you know, Sean Astin, Pauly Shore, and Brendan Fraser, Pauly Shore was by far the biggest draw, the biggest box office draw of the three, which is very strange to think about in 2024. But hopefully these last two episodes that we've done have, you know, kind of explained why that might be the case. So now we're finally, here we go. We're finally talking about the movie.
An actual movie that we've been threatening to do for like...
The point of this entire thing...
It's really the Totally Pauly marketing started over a year ago. So this, we've been threatening to talk about Encino Man for a very long time. We are finally doing it.
So yeah, Encino Man. I do have some notes about it. It was the feature film directorial debut by Les Mayfield, who had a production company called ZM Productions. Him and the people who wrote the movie, whose names were George Zaloom and Sean Sheps, they had this production company together called ZM Productions that originally specialized in behind the scenes documentaries. The most famous one of which I'd actually heard of this one before. It's a documentary about the making of Apocalypse Now called Hearts of Darkness. So there you go. The same people who directed Encino Man also made this famous Apocalypse Now documentary. Les Mayfield, this is interesting to us, Callie, because we've seen a few of these movies, went on to direct the 1994 remake of Miracle on 34th Street, starring Richard Attenborough.
And that's the one where he said, hey, goofball.
Hey, goofball. Huh? Yeah, you numbnuts.
Yeah.
And then Santa Claus assaults him because he thought of numbnuts.
Yes. Yes. We saw that in theaters. 30th anniversary this year.
We saw the remake of Miracle on 34th Street in theaters?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought we saw it on TV.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
I know we saw Flubber in theaters. I remember seeing Flubber. Wow.
That, so I feel like might have been a yeah, that might have been a Sun Theater, Williamston's local theater. That might have been, that feels like a Sun Theater screening to me. I've seen the weirdest movies because we had a one movie screen theater in the town where we grew up. So yeah, Flubber with Robin Williams.
Actually, that is where I saw one of the, I think it might have been the third Lord of the Rings movie with my middle school class. And Sean Astin was in that. So
there you go.
More connections to be made here.
Also directed Blue Streak with Martin Lawrence. I haven't seen this movie, but it's been on my to watch list. The Man, starring Samuel L. Jackson and Eugene Levy.
I didn't know that was a thing, but it's now on my watch list. It's probably on Tubi, honestly.
Probably. It seems like Tubi material. And that's not a racially charged comment. It's just, it's more of a comment about the quality of the film.
Although Tubi is where I watch Class X, so.
Yeah. And Codename the Cleaner, starring Cedric the Entertainer. So an illustrious film career. Encino Man was released May 22nd, 1992. By Buena Vista Pictures Distribution under the Hollywood Pictures label, was produced on a $7.5 million budget, which is very small, but it was a huge box office success, made $9.9 million in its opening weekend alone and $40.7 million in total North American box office.
Wow.
I'll just...
That's crazy.
I know.
You don't think about Encino Man making this. I love this movie. Like it's probably the last movie that we will watch in this series that it's the one that I have the most love for of all of them.
Yeah.
Like I feel like it is actually a good movie.
Yeah. It's the only one that I have a personal connection with. I think I mentioned before only two movies that I've seen that we're going to watch at this point are Encino Man and Class Act. So after here, I'm going in pretty much blind. Like I remember Pauly Shore's films being a thing. I remember seeing the Son-in-Law VHS tape, at the store a lot, but I've never seen it. It was, I saw Encino Man when I was a kid. I don't think I saw it in the theater, but we probably rented it.
I think you would have been eight when it came out. The soundtrack is really good.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this later, but like there's a lot of, I like every song of the soundtrack.
Yeah, it's one of the first tapes that I owned. It was right up there with the Wayne's World soundtrack, you know? Which is also great, exactly. This is honestly where I think 99% of my goodwill for Pauly Shore comes from, because I encountered him as Stony at a formative age in the development of my, comedic sensibilities. It was like Michelangelo, Bill and Ted, Wayne and Garth, Stony. You know, it's just like it all makes sense. And that's why I am a neurotic nerd.
You appreciated Stony's character, but maybe you took more from Sean Astin's character.
Yeah, right. Sadly. I know. Yeah, it's like I see myself as Stony, but who I really am is probably Sean Astin.
The first time I saw Encino Man was when we were doing, when we were reading The Dirt, and we read one of Vince Neil's chapters about how he like slept with Pauly's girlfriend or whatever. And I was like, well, I need to watch this film. I heard you're invited, but your friend can't come first before I saw this movie. And I yeah. love that song. I like that song better than any Motley Crue song. It's a great song. And I like Motley Crue.
Paulie's in the video, right?
I think so.
What's up? Hey, what are you guys looking for? Some extra chicken bones?
Oh, right. Vince Neil's in there.
Vince Neil. You know, he's my best friend. Hey, wait, one sec. No, he's in there? Hey, my scooter seats too.
Oh.
It does.
Yeah, sure.
Hey, buddy, what are you doing here? Just let me cruise in for a second, bro. Come on!
So... Encino Man was a box office success. It was a success in our household. It was not, however, a critical success. It currently has a 14% Rotten Tomatoes rating based on 35 reviews. The critical consensus says Encino Man isn't the first unabashedly silly comedy to embrace its stupidity and amass a cult following, but whether or not it works for you will largely be determined by your tolerance for Pauly Shore. Which is accurate.
I feel like that could also be like the tagline for this season.
Yeah. For everything Pauly Shore has been involved with, it's, you know.
It's predicated on your tolerance of Pauly Shore.
It's kind of like how your ability to survive drinking arsenic is depends on your tolerance for poison. So, obviously, with a reputation that bad, I had to look up some reviews. Here's the review from Variety in full. I couldn't just take one little quote from it. Encino Man is a mindless would-be comedy aimed at the younger set. Low budget quickie is insulting even within its own no effort parameters. This is like, I know that this is the Variety House style, but it seems like they hate the movie so much that they won't even write in complete sentences. They're just like, let me just get this shit out of the way. Incompetent screenplay from a screen story by Sean Sheps and producer George Zaloom dawdles over the introductions with well over a reel elapsing before Cro-Magnon man Brendan Fraser unfreezes after turning up in a block of ice uncovered by Encino teen Sean Astin while digging a backyard swimming pool. Pick's sci-fi pretense is immediately abandoned as Astin and buddy Pauly Shore contrived to pass off Fraser as a transfer student to Encino High. Only tension is that he wins the hearts of femmes, including Aston's dream girl, Megan Ward. Debuting feature director Les Mayfield exhibits low aptitude for comedy, resorting to pratfalls and food sloppiness for laughs. Film is nominally a vehicle for MTV comic Shore, who flunks out on screen with his tediously unfunny patter and smaller-than-life personality. I think that's a little harsh. I don't know.
Smaller than life.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with anything else in this review, but smaller than life, like, I don't know if you could call the weasel smaller than life, because that means that what? Like, the weasel is a thing that could exist in everyday
like
life.
Like a toned down version.
I know.
The Washington Post also unsurprisingly hated it. This one, I will just take pull a quote out of. They called it less funny than your own funeral, which is maybe the funniest thing I've ever read about a movie.
It depends on how funny your funeral.
That's true. I do think this was surprised me because they said that Pauly was a likable MTV personality. And you would think from the writer of Less Funny Than Your Own Funeral that they would not think that. But then they call Sean Astin an unlikable pug, which
is absolutely true.
Which
he is
absolutely
such
true.
A piece of
his
shit.
Character, you know, like I'm sure Sean Astin is a perfectly likable pug, but the character.
What is his character's name? I don't even remember.
Oh my God. What was it?
I remember Stoney. And I remember Link. I've seen this movie several times. I just call him Sam Gamgee, so I don't know what
Dave. Well, that's fucking why. Of course it's Dave.
I could not have told you that for $1 million. I do not remember listening to me.
I'll also say Encino Man was notably Pauly Shore's first of many Razzie Awards. He won Worst New Star. But we talked a little bit about this last time where Pauly Shore was definitely one of the hinges on which the generation gap in the early 90s turned. And I think that, you know, if you were writing for Variety in 1992 or the Washington Post, sure, you didn't like this. But I think people, the actual target audience who grew up with this movie, has a lot of fondness for it. And so this is a movie that I think has, its reputation has gotten better with time.
I don't think it's a bad movie for, I mean, it's not any sillier than movie. Like any teen movie.
Yeah,
but it's
just
also
a teen
funny
movie.
Because like Labyrinth was an absolute failure when it came out. And it's kind of the same thing where it's like, if you grew up with it, you love right. it and think it's a great movie.
Right. You either get it or you don't. Yeah. 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 I think it's a perfectly fine. I mean, it's like, obviously it has a ridiculous premise.
I've been watching, it's funny because I've actually been watching a lot of like 90s and 2000s teen movies. And even if they don't have the added like sci-fi thing of finding a caveman basically in your backyard in Encino, and then you just put some space heaters on him and he unfreezes.
Yeah.
Like there's still about that level of like, there's not that plausibility and they're goofy. Like it stands up alongside it, even with or without Pauly Shore, it stands up with other teen movies of that caliber.
Yeah.
From that time period, yeah. Or even a little bit afterward.
Exactly. Yeah. I have a lot of fondness for Encino Man. And I think a lot of people our age do, so much so that a couple years ago for the movie's 30th anniversary, there was an oral history of Encino Man on the website Inverse. And there's some interesting stuff in there. So that article says, it begins, it may not be the best movie of the 90s, but Encino Man might well be the most 90s movie ever made. It's the film that established Brendan Fraser's preternatural talent for playing wide-eyed fish out of water naifs plopped into 90s California, a formula that treated him well. As the writer Anna Bogutskaya, I'm sure I didn't do that right, but as the writer argued in a 2021 article, Encino Man was the first in Fraser's Himbo trilogy alongside 1997's George of the Jungle and 1999's Blast from the Past. And all three, she writes, Fraser plays a simple hunk who is unaware of his own buffness, delivered into a modern world without an ounce of toxic masculinity in him, all goofy and wide-eyed and open to all the exciting things society has to offer to a beautiful man. I think that's
funny that he plays that role frequently too.
And he does it so well. Yeah. I know this is a Pauly Shore podcast.
Brendan Fraser is another person who is like attractive, but who isn't annoying because they just seem like such a wonderful person.
Right, right, exactly.
I mean, not necessarily, that doesn't necessarily apply to Pauly Shore, but specifically to Brendan.
Right. Yeah, I know this is a Pauly Shore podcast, but I do want to reserve some praise for Brendan Fraser, because that was one of the things that really struck me watching this again. The first time I watched this, I mean, so this was Brendan Fraser's, I think he might have technically shot School Ties first. And in fact, in the oral history, they talk a little bit about how he was a little not thrilled that this one came out first. Because School Ties is, if you haven't seen that one, it's like, you know, he plays a Jewish kid at a private school with all these WASPs, you know, and he has this like experience of being bullied. And it's like a very like capital A acting kind of thing. And, you know, he filmed these almost at the same time. And the one that comes out first is Encino Man. And he was like, I want to be an actor. I don't want to be a caveman, you know. But honestly, his performance as Link, the caveman, is so good. You know, it could just like it doesn't have to be that good. You know, he has the body for it, like whatever. And then he yells a lot and stuff. You know, it's like he could have really phoned this in. But like, I just was really struck by how invested he was in the performance. And like, I feel like it kind of elevates the movie beyond the stupidity of the premise.
Right. Well, like in our last episode, I mentioned that Pauly Shore really makes the movie, and I stand by that. But also, I feel like Brendan Fraser's character does too, because if you took him as Link out and use any other actor, I don't think this would work. And then Pauly Shore's obnoxiousness would take over, and it wouldn't be as good. But the two of them playing off each other makes this movie.
So real quick, before we get into talking more about the movie. We touched upon this a little bit last time, and we talked about it a little bit earlier this episode too. You know, Pauly Shore was the marquee actor here. In the oral history, the co-writer George Zaloom said some of these execs at Disney, they were the owners of Buena Vista, were like, what about this guy, Pauly Shore? We were like, oh, that guy? No way. They were like, no, he's super popular. He'll help us get the movie out. We're like, yeah, maybe. So Pauly was like the first person to be cast. Originally, apparently, they wanted Pauly to play the caveman. And Pauly said that wasn't a good idea. He said, I'm not playing the caveman because cavemen don't speak. They grunt, and I have a whole kind of language. So then Jeffrey Katzenberger told them to rewrite one of the roles for the best friend that finds the caveman. So then Pauly worked with his writer and producer and started rewriting the role for Stoney. And, you know, this is, I when I saw this, I was like, oh my God, because I feel like we talked about this, like, you know, offline between ourselves. Pauly's character feels very much like he replaced another character in the script. Because yeah. so much about him and Dave, Sean Astin's character, is like, why are these two friends?
On one hand, I agree that it would make more sense for him not to be the caveman because of his character, but I also feel like it would make more sense for him. Like, from a script perspective, like I don't think it would have been as successful as it was with Brendan Fraser. However, I feel like it would have been made more sense. Like, I see where that line of thought came from. It's almost like Pauly Shore just shouldn't be in the movie at all.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The most logical decision was to not have Pauly Shore in the movie. I'm glad they didn't make that decision. Because I feel like some of the things that are kind of like magical about the character are because of this. So, like, one of my favorite things, the character's name is Stoney. He is the weasel. He is literally, they took the weasel and inserted him into the movie.
He calls himself the weasel. Like,
calls himself the weasel. He makes the weasel noise. And like, when they're like, him and Dave are on the scooter and they're driving into school, and he's like, it's like you can see Pauly Shore trying to get as many of his catchphrases out in the screen time as he possibly can, because he's like, oh, and then he starts singing, I'm a Stony Crusty Dude. Exist in the Encino Man universe? I don't know. Stony knows the words, though. When you're familiar with the weasel character, it's unmistakable. He's just, I've never seen anything quite like it. I guess the closest thing to it would be maybe Andy Kaufman in Taxi is playing, you know, is just the foreign man character. But even that, they gave him like a different backstory. This is just the weasel. But, you know, so what I love about it, though, is like the weasel is canonically dumb. But because this character was sort of replacing some other nerdy character who was Sean Astin's friend in an earlier draft, Stoney is consistently the one who knows facts about cavemen. So it's like, he's this bimbo who also just like has a lot of passion for learning about cavemen.
But I also really appreciate that from a non like functioning perspective, but just like how it is in that universe, because I really like the idea of Stoney being a multidimensional learner and maybe autistic. Because I can relate. Right. Like, I too am a complete dumbass, but I have like very specific intelligence on very specific things.
Exactly.
To me, it's relatable. Because I'm like, yeah, I didn't know all the answers in class, but also like could not do basic addition.
So it's like, by accident, it kind of makes the character more interesting. The one issue with it I have is that Dave is like such a chode. That's where my suspension of disbelief runs out. Because Stoney is cool. And I'm sorry, like, we've all been to high school. I knew guys who were like kind of Stoney-esque, you know, like the stoner dudes. And they were popular. They weren't like, you know, they were sort of outside of the standard hierarchy. You know, they weren't like hanging out with the jocks necessarily, but they could kind of go in and out of the other categories. And I just I don't buy that Stoney would be bullied,
especially because he's a man. Like, it didn't, because he reminds me of how me and my friends were, except one, we weren't actually like smoking weed, so that probably had something to do with it. I feel like a lot of the social fluidity of stoners is that they supply weed. But
right.
That being said,
yeah.
Like that, like persona and like being funny mainly works if you're a guy.
Right.
In high school. Not to get all political.
Not too many some people
social
talk
commentary.
Stoney's male privilege, right?
Yeah. But I also think like it did come up because the quote about Brendan Fraser's character Link, and the way he acted in that role and in others where he was kind of playing that same kind of role, like the himbo with no toxic masculinity. I think a certain amount of that can also be applied to the Weasel character too. You know, there's like a little bit of that because he does like hound after women and call them nugs all this time. But still, like, his character is not like the typical masculine, like, even like compared to other characters like Sean Penn's character in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. It's like he's still different from even that definition of like that kind of stoner masculinity.
Or like both Spicoli and Bill and Ted, you know, use the F word, right? Like the slur version.
Yeah.
And I don't really get a homophobic vibe from the Weasel most of the time. I think there was actually a moment in that in the Totally Buff Pauly special where he sees somebody with long blonde hair from behind and starts hitting on her, and it turns out to be a dude, and he's like,
oh, that's a guy. Does that mean I'm gay? No. Okay, cool. You guys still hungry? You want to munch?
You know, but it's like, but it's not, it's like he's kind of chill about the idea that it might, that he might be gay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's not, there's or no like, gay panic, you know?
Or even like, I think it's partly because he's playing a character kind of like when he did the host on the children's show, where I think he's aware that he's in this situation, he's playing a character in a movie that might be watched by younger people. And so there's like a kind of like sweetness about his character where he's just like very like earnest and sweet as Stoney. And this is like his version of the Weasel in Encino Man is kind of like more tailored for like kids and younger middle school students, which I appreciate that he did that.
Yeah. And I think that that's one reason why, I mean, we talked about this before, you know, his name is Stoney, like obviously everything about him is very stoner coded. You know, he dresses kind of like a hippie. There's a scene where he's doing Tai Chi, listening to Frankenstein by Edgar Winner, you know, like, okay, yes, this is the behavior of somebody who's on weed, right? But and I think he might have a, I think he has a lighter, but we never see him with a joint. We never really see him like with, you know, red eyes or whatever. Honestly, there's very little innuendo. He just is who he is. And I appreciate that for on a couple levels. I like the fact that, you know, it makes it sort of like a kid can relate to Stoney. Because one of the, I just think it's, you know, the most tedious fucking thing in the world to me is like looking at Scooby-Doo and being like, oh, Shaggy and Scooby, like they've totally got the munchies, you know, like it's
yeah,
just like,
when really so, what you should be saying is Shaggy and Scooby are gay.
They're married.
And
exactly.
So the rest of,
that's the subtext that I'm here for.
The mystery game.
Right. I like that there's no like wink, wink, nudge, nudge about it. And you can put whatever interpretation you want. Because like just like you, I didn't smoke weed in high school. I'm a very late adopter. And honestly, so many of the things that I find relatable about that kind of character has very little to do with whether I have THC in my system or not. You know,
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, me and my friends literally, we're basically three different Stoneys.
Right.
Like, that's how we behave in high school. And we, like, I think some of my friends would, like, casually smoke weed, but I didn't smoke weed when I was a teenager at all. I was just neurodivergent.
Right. So yeah, it's like an unexpected outcome of the kid friendly. The fact that this is a Disney property, you know, is that you have this sort of like less toxic, you know, more expansive version of this character. And, you know, and it means that I don't have to feel weird about, like, showing my kid Bill and Ted, and then there's the part where they have a gay panic. It's like, oh, that sucks, you know?
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, so Paulie did say, not only did he change the dialogue, he changed the name. I don't remember what the character's name was originally, but that character was similar to Sean's character. Two nerdy guys that find a caveman. And now it's like a nerdy guy that finds a caveman with this crazy sidekick friend, Stoney. So it makes, it makes no sense.
Always at their house. He's basically like Urkel.
Yeah. You can tell all the parts that came from Paulie because it's like he's at their house. He's canonically Jewish. I think there's a reference to his bar mitzvah or something.
Yeah.
He's a child of divorce. You know, it's like there's all this stuff that is like, okay, this is obviously from the Paulie draft, you know. The only other thing I want to point out is just that when they were punching up the script, the co-writer Sean Shep said, the problem is I'd sit down with him and ask what nugs meant or what wheeze meant. And I found out he didn't know what they meant. He was just improvising. So I put his language in the script anyway, figuring he'd just do whatever he was going to do. I don't know if that's true. I feel like Paulie had a definition of nugs and wheeze. I feel like those are very clearly
defined. Yeah, they're used consistently.
Right.
Maybe we should recreate this reference sheet or find the original. I wonder if that's anywhere, but if not, we should recreate this
reference. Well, there is, I think in that oral history, they have a picture of it in there. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. There's this piece of promotional material. It's like a, you know, the little slidey thing, like the Led Zeppelin 3 album cover. You know what I'm talking about?
Where it's
a pinwheel. And I'm sure there's
another word for that or an easier way to describe that, but that is the most accessible one
for us, you know.
You know that thing on the Sticky Fingers album cover that we have on our pants? What is that?
It's also on your pants, yeah. There's a picture of Paulie Shore. I think it's actually him from the cover of Future of America. And on one side, there's a cutout of a word. And the example that they have in the article is chillin', which honestly, why do you need a definition for that? But chillin', and then it says it means this. And on the other side, you turn it and there's another cutout and it's hanging out. So if you
what you need I to want know, this. Can someone track this down and send it to us? Yeah. I really want this.
So yeah, even the marketing was very Paulie-centric. So yeah, let's talk about this movie. It's a teen movie in the Teen Wolf tradition.
I've actually never seen Teen Wolf.
Oh my God, you have to see Teen Wolf. It's so
good. Yeah, I know, I know. Maybe I should do that like this week for research.
Teen Wolf is about Michael J. Fox. So Michael J. Fox is a wolf man, and he has all this anxiety about like, I'm in high school. People are going to judge me. I can't let anybody know I'm a werewolf, but he's like objectively more popular when he's being the wolf than when he's just being Michael J. Fox. And that's kind of the message of the movie. And that, so
be Michael J. Fox.
Is that, it's like, what if a caveman was in high school? And the answer is he would be the most popular kid in the school. And that's like, I
feel
I love
like
how,
this works specifically because of Brendan Fraser, who is like extremely attractive, though. Like, with anyone else, it would not work. And I feel like part of that comes from him being conventionally attractive as a caveman. And so that's kind of people perceive him as differently than what he is. So when he's doing ridiculous things, it's cool because he's attractive.
Right.
So, really, it's a comment on pretty privilege.
Yeah. Yeah, so Sean Astin is just this insufferable little dork. He wants to be popular in high school. I should clarify again, I'm not talking about Sean Astin the actor. I'm sure he's a perfectly fine person, but and if anything, he's clearly a great actor because Dave is just like repulsive. I hate him so much.
He sucks so much. And
you know, it's clearly a good performance because I would not have such a strong reaction to him if
I think part
if
of
Sean
it
Astin hadn't
is that
pulled it off.
it's just so nonsensical. It's like he's so obsessed with, like, he's about to graduate and he's so obsessed with, like, pleasing these people in his high school. He gives a shit. And he's going to do so by digging a pool in his backyard. Like,
yeah, he's trying to rise in the social hierarchy before he graduates from high school. He has this weird crush on this girl who he was friends with as a child, and they kind of grew apart because she got hot and he didn't, you know, the tale as old as time. And so his solution to getting her to notice him is digging a pool in his backyard. And that's when they find this frozen caveman and unthaw him.
They unthaw him by putting him in their garage and then putting a whole bunch of sheeters on him. And somehow he, like, thaws out while they're away from the house. And so then
it's like during a school day. Yeah. Cause they leave him there and go to school, and then he unthaws. Yeah. And so they discover this caveman in their house. And of course, because Dave is just the worst fucking person, his immediate thought is like, I can exploit this. I don't know what his plan is exactly, because he should have known. Like,
isn't it that they can, like, make money off of him? Like, can't remember. Like,
but how? And they end up disguising him as a student, and this is also, like, anybody would know. Brendan Fraser is not going to be your wingman. Like, what the fuck? What are you trying to accomplish? All the girls are going to fall in love with him. Like, what are you doing? You're already less attractive than Pauly Shore.
I mean, obviously, that you have to suspend your disbelief a little bit, but not that much, because he's such a piece of shit. And Brendan Fraser is so cute that it's like, of course they like this caveman more than you. It doesn't matter that he doesn't speak full sentences.
And I think this is another thing, that the characterization of Link, the cave, they name him that because he's like the missing link. And they pass him off as a exchange student, which explains why he can't speak in full sentences.
Well, and then the way they are able to do it is, like, don't they take in, like, the dog immunizations or something to get them?
Yes. Yes.
And somehow the papers get mixed up.
One of the things that I think makes this movie work is that, you know, you would expect that it would be a Link can't adjust to the modern world. You know, he's going to be too wild. He's, you know, but actually he's kind of like the most pure of the three of them. He's the one who doesn't have any ulterior motives. He makes friends really easily. He has this, like, you know, sweet nature about him that just makes him very likable. And Dave is a fucking monster. Like, he's trying to exploit him. He's trying to, like, manipulate women into liking him. Like, Dave is far and away more toxic than this caveman that they excavated.
Yeah, and Pauly Shore is the voice of reason in this. His character is the one who's annoyed at Dave for wanting to exploit him and actually wants to humanize him and, like, hang out with him as a friend instead of exploit him.
One of the things I like about Dave and Stoney's dynamic is that they portray him almost like he comes from like he's an alien or something. Like, there's this part where Dave is trying to talk him into the whole charade of, you know, using Link to get popular. And he's like, wouldn't you like a new pair of bell bottoms? And it's like Stoney has this entirely different set of values that Dave can exploit.
Do you think it's like, you know how Motley Crue would, like, waste all their money on, like, new boots and pants and then, like, live off of their girlfriends? Do you think it's like that kind of a thing?
Yeah.
Talk about that to me in old clothes terms. That's the only like currency exactly. That he acknowledges.
Yeah, money isn't important to Stoney. Only bell bottoms, juice to wheeze, you know, mesh shirts.
I do love that part where he goes to the convenience store with Link and teaches him how to wheeze the deuce, and then the employee or owner or whatever at the convenience store is like, no wheezing juice.
Yeah, it's like a known thing.
Yeah, I love other people using the Stoney dialect. As if Weezer the Juice means anything.
So, yeah, there's, you know, it proceeds as you might imagine. There's various caveman hijinks. There's also the girl that Sean Astin's character is trying to get with. She has a boyfriend who's, you know, the jock bully kind of character. He starts developing this bizarre rivalry with Link. So then the climax of the movie is he exposes that Link is a caveman at the school dance. You know, he finds this like evidence. Very conveniently, Dave and Stoney have these Polaroids where they like, now here's us unfreezing our caveman friend Link. You know, it's like all this really incriminating evidence. And he finds that and the fact that they falsified the dog's record, and he goes to the school dance and he's like, Link is a caveman. And then, of course, what I love is that this is basically the end of the movie because everybody's like, fuck yeah, he is. And they all just cheer. And then
Link and Stoney turns their music back on.
Yeah, and they all dance. And that's the end of the movie.
and then his girlfriend or his like cave girl
right
friend,
his cave wife
also unthawed,
gets unfrozen
and right just
and of course she immediately comes out looking like a beige. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's a very lightweight movie, but I think there's elements, Brendan Fraser's performance, Pauly's performance, the ways that the characters kind of subvert teen movie stereotypes a little bit.
The soundtrack is great. Like, so it opens up with a PM Dawn song, which is really cool.
Yeah.
You're Invited But Your Friend Can't Come by Vince Neil is on there. Infectious Groove too. They're like a funk metal band formed from members of like Suicidal Tendencies and stuff. Like,
yeah. And, the drummer from really Jane's cool Addiction. Music.
Yeah.
It was the first, I remember, I distinctly remember the first time I heard Stone Cold Crazy by Queen was the scene where Link and Stoney go to the amusement park. Which when I was watching this again, Kia pointed out to me that it must have been some kind of like Babes Get In Free day at the amusement park. Cause it is literally like, watch that scene again. It is literally Stoney, Link, and a bunch of babes. Like, there are no other men in the park. It's babe day at Magic Mountain or whatever the fuck.
I also wonder, is like, there's some kind of like, I guess it was near around when Freddie Mercury died, right? But I was thinking, was there like some like reissue of Queen? Because this has a Queen song and so does Wayne's World.
Yeah. And that's why I think, you know, when I was around that age, I got into Queen was kind of the first band that I got into because I heard Bohemian Rhapsody and Wayne's World. And then I heard Stone Cold Crazy and Encino Man. So, yeah, it's very interesting how like you discover these things because of these very historically specific circumstances. You know, like it's weird that one of the reasons why I still love rock music from the 70s is because I watched Encino Man when I was young.
Yeah. Well, and it's also like around this time Dazed and Confused came out too. And there was a lot of that, obviously, in Dazed and Confused.
I guess the most Pauly centric scene is where they're in the bar. It's after they this school for some reason has driver's ed cars on site.
Oh yeah. I forgot about this already.
Link gets behind the wheel and like, you know, goes up on two wheels and stuff and drives off. And they end up at this bar in downtown LA where these like very stereotypical Mexican like gangbanger types are there drinking tequila. And Stoney is like taking shots of tequila with them.
That's the only like substance that you really see him consume.
And it seems to be the first time he's ever had alcohol.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there anything else to say about Encino Man?
Not really. I my other podcast, I haven't recorded anything for a while, but we were doing a movie scene one and I wanted to do You're Invited, But Your Friend Can't Come. And I watched Encino Man specifically to see the scene that it's in. And it just plays like briefly during the scene where they get in a fight.
It's at the hockey scene, right?
At the hockey rink. And like in my mind, it was just such a huge, I think it was one of the dance scenes, either when they like go, I think it's the same scene where Sony gets drunk. There's a song in there, or during prom or whatever the dance was. I superimposed that song into one of those scenes, but in fact, it only plays briefly, like just like part of the song. Yeah. And I think it plays during the credits. But like in my mind, I'm like, yeah, this song fit perfectly with the scene. And then I watched it, I'm like, it wasn't even in the movie, barely. I just love that song so much that I wanted to be a main part of the movie.
I feel like it was the first track on the soundtrack.
That makes sense. It does have first track energy.
I wish I still had the tape, because I definitely had that on cassette.
I know. Well, I still have all our tapes. We still have the Labyrinth soundtrack on tape, but I don't have it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to it. Maybe I sold it at a garage sale or, you know, something.
It was probably sold.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Class Act. This is not a Pauly Shore vehicle. This is sort of the inverse of Encino Man. Because honestly, when you told me we should do Encino Man and Class Act, I was like, I've seen Class Act and I don't remember Pauly Shore being in that at all. But he is in it, barely. And I think why I didn't remember it is because it's like almost more of a cameo than...
Yeah, no, it definitely is a cameo. He's barely in it.
And when I say cameo, I mean... It seems like a video that was shot on the website Cameo because it's all delivered front facing to the camera, seemingly apropos of nothing. There's no mention of him or this event or anything like, so Class Act is a Kid and Play vehicle. It's part of the Kid and Play cinematic universe. It is, according to this Wikipedia article that I have in front of me right now, an urban retelling of Mark Twain's The Prince and the Pauper, which I guess it is.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. I think it's more of like a play on that idea than an actual retelling. But.
Right. You know, so basically Play is like this juvenile delinquent and Kid is this...
like a juvenile delinquent to the most high level that you can... like, they are so... exaggerated in their roles that it's ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah, everything about this movie is super exaggerated because then Kid is, you know, like a super genius, which means that he's never watched television before and he only ever reads, you know, Shakespeare or whatever. Like,
but he has a very high flat top fade.
Yes. That is what I could not get over this, that he has this extreme hip hop hairstyle. But he's like a huge dork. I like that doesn't make any sense. You don't have a 12-inch high top fade if you've, you know, never heard a rap song before. That's
right.
Crazy.
And it's referenced in the movie too, because his dad says something about cutting it. And he says like, I'm just expressing myself, dad, something like that.
So both of them have to go back to school for, a year. Kid's character Duncan, it's because he needs to pass phys ed, of course, because he's a nerd, you know. And then Play's character, whose name I just remembered is Blade, confused with the Daywalker Blade. He's released from jail, but his parole officer tells him he needs to graduate from high school. And honestly, this is a kind of an Encino Man connection that I didn't think of. There's a paperwork mix up between the two of them that for some reason the school there's no checks and balances at this school. The fact that their photos are swapped with their files means that no one will believe that they're each other. So
yeah,
through these circumstances, now they have just become, now Kid is Blade and Play is Duncan, and they use that to their advantage. And they both like, you know, they discover things about themselves. Like Play discovers that he actually is smart, and Kid, one of my favorite scenes of the movie is where Kid figures out, he's really good at kicking field goals. because he uses math. And I love the idea that in the universe of this movie, no one has ever applied math to sports before. This is something that was invented in 1992 by Kid from Kid and Play.
Also, another one of my favorite scenes when, because they both have respective girlfriends now, but it's like they're attracted to each other's reputation. And so, like, obviously, Play's character is seen as, like, really smart. He's a genius. And so this girl is attracted to him. And Kid's character is supposed to be this, like, really cool, devil-may-care, like, delinquent, basically. And so,
tough guy. Yeah.
And so Play's character, he's, like, studying with this girl. And they're talking about Shakespeare. And then in order to understand, she's, like, trying to describe the metaphor for an orgasm. That Shakespeare uses in one of his sonnets, and I think it's one of the sonnets. But then plays like, wait, you mean to tell me Shakespeare was writing about busting in some girl's coochie? One of my favorite lines
that was
in cinematic
honestly
history.
The only thing about Class Act that I remembered before I watched Class Act again.
I remember that Pauly Shore was in, and part of it was because I get it confused with Encino Man because there are so many similarities.
Right. So, okay. So we've summarized a lot of this movie. I'm not going to get into like all of it because as you've probably been able to figure out, none of this applies to Pauly Shore. Basically about 2/3 of the movie, Pauly Shore shows up. He once again, like I said, delivers a monologue directly to the camera about an anti-drug rally, which...
But he, like, trips over his words and is like, a drug.
He calls it the drug rally first. Because this is not a Disney product, so this Pauly Shore, this weasel,
it's still Stony. It's definitely still the Stony character. He's definitely still the weasel, but this is where
he's in the bell-bottoms.
It's like the less wholesome version.
Right.
Because he also is like, he's already booked the topless dancers from Sloppy Seconds or whatever the fuck it's called. And then we later find out in his second appearance that they couldn't come. And so now Kid and Play have to rap or whatever.
And I remember watching it and I was like, oh my God, Kid's going to freestyle about science, isn't he? He's going to do a rap about science. And sure enough, he does. And then he's just kind of like, while the rally is going on, you could just see Pauly like doing this in the background. Like, you know, he's just weaseling. Like, and that's it. Never to be seen again. The character disappears. He was apparently, I watched one of the Totally Pauly episodes from, because again, he would always do episodes from the set of whatever movie, probably much to the chagrin of everyone else involved. He was on the set for like 2 days and then, in the Totally Pauly episode, he's then like hanging out with people in craft services and stuff. And there's a part, it's obviously scripted, but there's a part where he's talking to Kid and Play and he's like,
remember me? I had 2 days on your movie. My name's Pauly Shore.
Oh, that's right.
Nice to see you. How you doing? Remember me? I had 2 days on your movie, Pauly Shore.
It's Pauly Shore. You remember Paul?
What scene were you in?
I played the anti-drug rallier.
Who's this guy?
Hey. There's Randy, the director.
Who's
remember me? I had 2 days on your movie.
Oh, wait. Was he that guy that was in the snake around his neck? Was that the guy?
No.
Mm-mm.
Hey, listen, I really love to spend some time with you today. I got to get
going. Wait. Once your part is done, you really can't hang around.
Okay. Well, no, it's Key Grip.
Security. Security.
I was Key Grip.
Yeah, security.
This is Kid and Play, right?
There's not much else to say about the movie, but I do want to introduce a new segment that I'm going to do where I talk about my favorite Pauly Shore outfit from the movie, the outfit that he's worn. Right now, the working title for it is Pauly Fashion Watch.
You better work.
First things first, wardrobe.
Class Act is going to be easy to do because I think he only wears one outfit, but it's a really good one. It's the frilly purple outfit. He has we'll post these pictures on our Instagram too, but he has a purple headband and then a very like Prince, kind of like someone handmade like a purple ring New Romantics type outfit that they met to like wear at the venue from Purple. Like if they were an extra in that scene. But yeah, it's very like frilly, different shades of purple, looks very handsome. He's got the bell bottoms on, lots of scarves. It's great. It's a contender for my top outfit from any of these movies, because at the end, I'm going to go through, decide my favorite outfit from every movie. Class Act is only one, but that's the candidate for that one.
Quality over quantity.
Yeah. And in Encino Man, he has, like, I have to do the one where he's got the striped bell bottoms, which he actually wears with other outfits, because there's a couple outfits he wears in Encino Man. I think most, if not all of them, have the pink striped bell bottoms on. But the best use of that was also with the pink mesh top that he has.
Oh, yeah. It's iconic.
You can see it on display in the scooter scene where he's got the pink mesh top, the pink striped bell bottoms, vertical stripes, and then he has the pink headband. So that's the top outfit from Encino Man for me.
The only other outfit I can really think about in Encino Man is because I kept looking at it because I was like, what the fuck is it? It's he has a shirt that I think has like a crowd scene from Woodstock on it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't remember. I have to watch it again.
The scene, which we kind of glossed over. We didn't talk about this scene, but there's a part where Link and Stoney and Dave all kind of like break up as friends.
Oh, is this when Dave drives him out to the wilderness and just kind of drops him off and like you would get rid of a puppy? Or like if you were raising like a squirrel.
Harry and the Hendersons. He like gives him a bunch of change so that he can like play arcade games or whatever. And he's like, go on, get out of here. And Sony stops him. And they have this big dramatic conversation, and it's the scene where Dave is like, all you care about is Doug's chilling and grinding. But I feel like that's the scene where Stoney is wearing, it's like a shirt, a screen printed shirt with a crowd, like a concert crowd. And I'm pretty sure it's from the Woodstock movie.
Dude, I have to watch this back.
His characterization is very interesting to me, because like with the bell bottoms and the Woodstock, it's like, I guess he's just like a 60s guy in the 90s. I don't know. It's very,
I mean,
it's
but there's a precedent for that. I even remember I went to high school in the early to mid the mid to late 2000s. And there were kids wearing Woodstock. Actually, Woodstock, the like 40th year anniversary or whatever was 2009. So like there was a lot of like Woodstock marketing, and then a lot of like the stoner kids were into hippie stuff. You were either a hippie stoner or you were like a tall teen like stoner who was really into Tupac, even though you're from Williamson, Michigan, and you're white. You're a two breed.
Right.
And then there were the Cookie Monster stoners, but there were a lot of like Woodstock people. Like, I'm into stoner stuff.
Yeah.
So I love Bob Marley and I love other like 60s and 70s groups.
Yeah,
so I think there is a precedent
like
the Doors,
for that. Hendrix,
especially if like there's the Queen music in there. If there was like a reissue, because even like we talked about this with the Mike Myers stuff, but there was a lot of 60s stuff coming out in the 90s. I mean, it's not unheard of, especially if there was like a Queen reissue, which is why there was all this Queen music in these movies.
Yeah, you know, I was actually just, along with all of the Totally Pauly episodes, I've also been watching some of his more recent podcasts, the Jam in the Van stuff. And I feel like I saw an episode recently where he was talking about music with somebody and he said, you know, the music I like is, you know, like the Allman Brothers and like, you know, this like 60s and 70s kind of stuff. So that might honestly just be like Pauly bringing in his own. He had to listen to Skid Row and Take Me to the Other Side by Aerosmith for MTV. But when Pauly is just being Pauly, then he's going to put on the Woodstock soundtrack, you know?
Yeah.
But that also brings up, I think I have one more thing I want to say is just one of the things that I loved about Encino Man, and I feel the same way, honestly, about Wayne's World, is this very brief, like when we look back, the narrative now is like, everything was glam metal and then grunge came along and then it became this really bifurcated like before and after. But that's actually not true when you look at the popular culture from that time period. You know, 92 is post Nevermind. And, you know, like Guns N' Roses wanted Nirvana to open for them. Like there was a brief moment where like the LA Sunset Strip kind of stuff, and the classic rock and the alternative rock were all sort of in the same space. The idea of like unified rock is such a time capsule, because now it's so hyper segmented. It's like you're either an alternative person or you're a classic rock person or you're a 80s rock person. But at the time, it's like you could very easily be into Skid Row and Pearl Jam, you know, like maybe not if you were like super in the scene, but if you were just a kid listening to MTV, like that, all that shit was in the mix. So yeah, like the Encino Man soundtrack has a Vince Neil solo track, and it also has Infectious Grooves, you know?
It has PM Dawn too, which was interesting, kind of going back to like the 60s, like hippie thing, because the 90s, in like that period of the 90s, there was a whole bunch of like hippie hip hop groups. PM Dawn,
right,
De La
right.
Soul, like all of those groups were inspired by a lot of like 60s hippie aesthetic and like mindset. And so that was kind of part of it too, which I feel like that's why the Stoney thing doesn't seem that out of place for me, because like, is that different from what like De La Soul's cover had a whole bunch of flowers and or Delight was all right, kind of from that period right. of time. Oh, but what I was going to say about music is there was such like a disparity, I feel like, in the scene between, say, like Poison or Def Leppard versus, I don't know, even like Motley Crue or something like that. But now it's like you'll see them all on the same billing, or like Classic Rock Radio plays all of those and the Cars. And so like it's kind of weird. I feel like it like was really nebulous like that. Like genres weren't as segmented, and then it became segmented by like rock critics, and now it's nebulous again because it's all just checked on classic rock radio
because it gets flattened out. Right exactly,
and they're all playing like festivals together or whatever.
I think that's all I have to say about these two fine films. Yeah, anything else?
They're good, you should watch them.
Yeah, so
you're
far
have a good time with these
so
ones.
Far we're two for
yeah
two.
You're gonna have a good time with these ones. I cannot speak for the rest here.
and Class Act, I don't know. Class Act is, it's no house party.
Yeah. It's less enjoyable than both of the other the first house party. It's less enjoyable than the first house party. It's less enjoyable than Encino Man, but there's something in there. It's a little bit long. It's kind of longer than it needs
is,
to
yeah.
be.
I was like, can we wrap this up? I don't remember being annoyed the first time I watched it. but I was also like waiting for Pauly to show up. I was like, what the fuck? It's been an hour. Like, where's Pauly? And then when he showed up, it made sense.
Well, did it? Well,
yeah. Did it make sense? So we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm so excited to watch Son-in-Law again.
And I've never seen it, so I'm excited to watch it for the first
time. It's also technically a Thanksgiving movie, so I feel like I forgot about that because I watched it like a year ago.
Oh.
I forgot it was a Thanksgiving movie, and I feel like from now on it's going to go into my Thanksgiving movie viewing. Yeah, it'll be, not new. Yeah. I'm still going to watch Plenty of Strange Automobiles, but Son-in-Law can be in there. Probably just me and Marlo, though, not at my parents' house.
You don't think Mom and Dad would
Mom
want to watch
Son-in-Law
every year?
Mom is very disapproving of this whole series. She was like, I usually listen, but I don't think I'll be listening to the Pauly Shore series.
Yeah, I don't even want to know what Dad thinks. I think if Dad knew who Pauly Shore was, he'd be even more upset. So anyway, you can check us out on Instagram at DystopianGram. You can check us out on YouTube at Dystopian Dance Party. You can check us out on the web at dystopiandanceparty.com. You can write us an email if you have that little Encino Man spinner thing and you want to sell it to us for a reasonable offer. Send an email to us at heybuddy@dystopiandanceparty.com. And I will put that on the, it's three U's, but I'll put that on the screen. Subscribe to our podcast. We're on everything of note. I don't think we're on Amazon because I don't know anybody who listens to podcasts on Amazon, but we're on Apple, Google, Spotify. You can probably find us on a platform. And give us a review, because this is a brand new podcast. Nobody's reviewed it yet as of this recording. If you give us a review, we'll say nice things about you on our next episode. So what more could you possibly want? Yeah, so we'll see you. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
All right!